people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and driving about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in the fog and dying. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They live on milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a fog and dust heat. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you run down my country, man, you walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on White Resistance Radio. .com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. Of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. And in 1956, there was a rebellion, an anti-communist rebellion in Hungary, having suffered 11 years of communist rule, and some units of the army, and some very brave students and civilians duked it out with the Red Army for a week or so, and then they finally withdrew, and there was a new government, a free Hungary, proclaimed. And then the Russian troops came back, crushing the rebellion with incredible brutality, and the West did nothing. Now, here is a reminiscence of a man who was there. After carrying the wounded to a doctor's office in Orleigh Street, we placed one of the wounded girls on the waiting room floor, which was full of the wounded. The seemingly unconscious girl opened her eyes. I put my ear to her mouth, and she said, "Oxy, there is candy in my pocket. Take some." As we left, we were captured on the corner of Orleigh and Bartok Bella Streets and taken to the university where the captured were held. Many of the Hungarian freedom fighters were students, and I know a number of them. In Buda, you enter the Technical University's main entrance from the Danube side. A few days later, to the right of the main entrance, I was standing in the safety behind the first tree with a loaded submachine gun, when in front of me, the secret police killed my friend, Janosch Donner. I was staring at the face of the AVH, that's the Hungarian secret police man, from 10 meters and could not pull the trigger. I learned that I cannot kill. Later, when we carried his stiff body, his shoe fell off, and I went crazy trying to put it back, thinking that if I did that, things would be okay, but I could not. As you walk into the big room, Yanchi's plaque is on the left wall of the large room. Around this room are the busts of the past presidents, and a photo that he shows you. Behind the people sitting is what at that time was the interrogation room before jailing. We were standing in line on the left when I noticed that I had a pistol in my pocket. I had to get rid of it because they shoot anybody with weapons. I was standing next to the bust of Rector Storchek, and when the guard looked the other way, I tipped the bust and slipped the pistol under it. Never again was I able to lift the bust because it's so heavy, and therefore I do not know if the little pistol is still there. So you can trace some of those steps. Visit the doctor in Orlais Street and ask if Marijke lived. The wounded girl's name was Marijke. You can stand behind the chestnut tree where I was hiding and check if you can lift it of the Storchek bust and go to the KA-51, which is the lecture room where we were held. If you do this in the afternoon, have dinner at the restaurant in Bartok Bella Street. The building once belonged to my grandmother. Nothing was returned, of course. By the way, during World War II, I was sitting in the basement of that building while American bombers, called the Liberators, were carpet bombing the city. The name of the restaurant is Sheged. The food is greasy but good, and the wine and the gypsy band are excellent. Very interesting remembrance of that very brave revolution of 1956, and one that once again the West failed to help, and it was crushed, as indeed the Spring Revolt in 1968 in Czechoslovakia would be crushed. It's kind of a moderate social communist. If you can call it that, Alexander Dubček had enough of heavy-handed Moscow communism and led a revolt, and it too was crushed by Soviet troops. This is, you'll hear an awful lot about this, I'd say, unhinged teenage girl, Greta Thunberg. And this is a very thoughtful message to her, a letter to Greta Thunberg.
Greta, I saw your presentation at COP24, and it was compelling, but I respectfully dispute your statements. A child is a miracle, Greta. A child should be able to live in joy, entranced by the wonder of the world, not in fear of the future or hatred of their elders. Big climate is a $1.5 trillion global industry. Greta, it's all built on a faulty premise that carbon dioxide is like a control knob on climate. But science has shown that that is not true. Your ancestor, Svante Arrhenius, not only developed the hothouse theory of catastrophic global warming, he also amended his catastrophic view. In 1906, in this paper, he wrote in German, he decided that warming would be perhaps around 1.5 degrees Celsius and beneficial. So when people tell you that the world only has 12 years left, they're telling you science fiction, not science fact. Those scary predictions come from computer simulations that are based on a worst-case scenario that is so far removed from reality, many scientists are angry that people are being scared and fooled in this way. But climate has become a big green business. That's who's greedy and uncaring. Big Green doesn't mind if poor people become poorer from heat-or-eat poverty, they just want the subsidies and the carbon credits. Let them eat carbon. You said, we adults have done nothing. That's not true. What amazing advances we've made in this world. People once lived lives that were solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short. That was a good description of life in the Little Ice Age just maybe 150 years ago or so. Then you might have had to marry at age 15 because people were only expected to live until they were about 35. You say that we're stealing our children's future. I disagree. My late mother lived to the age of 93. She was born before the radio was invented. Her father plowed the fields behind a horse, guiding a hand plow with a yoke around his neck. She lived through the Great Depression when many people lived on the verge of starvation. She and her brothers fought in World War II, and she lived to see humans land on the moon, Greta. What incredible things humans have accomplished. What a fabulous future you have. And almost all of these accomplishments were only possible thanks to the power of coal, natural gas, and oil. We cannot stop climate change, Greta, but we can be prepared for changes in climate, which, if you study history, you will know that there are many. Get off the strike line and go to school. Learn to think for yourself. Be curious so you can't be fooled. And have hope. We live in a world of wonder where science is about inquiry, not compliance. For Friends of Science Society, I'm Michelle Sterling.
I think that's a very thoughtful, powerful letter, and a very, very sensible. A lot more restrained than I would be if I had Greta within my power. Got to be careful how you say this, because we are in very politically correct times. In a different time, her father should have taken her up to her bedroom and given her a good spanking, made her little butt really red, and got and got her to think things through a little bit better. And hopefully she might come downstairs after she'd had some time for reflection and said something like, I'm sorry, Daddy, I'll go to school. I'll be good for now. No, it's not. I don't mean to denigrate anybody of any age who wants to stand up for what they believe in and so on. But there's also the way it's being done, and I'm quite insistent about that. The way it's being done. Sure, she has a right to her opinion, as misguided as it is. Or I think she is really being used as the cute. Well, she's not even really cute, but the young, passionate mouthpiece of other interests. There's a huge industry centered around the so-called climate change. So the CBC, that's our Communist Broadcasting Corporation, has embarked on a series of exposing hate in Canada. Yeah, okay, and we don't have to be be sitting on the edge of our seats to know it's going to be conservatism or patriotism or nationalism. It's not going to be people who believe in the Talmud, for instance. No, it's the usual smear. Anyway, got this note from good supporter in Calgary. And actually, I saw this piece on the television news, CBC National, on the CBC All News Channel, gets repeated again and again and again. So actually, I saw it or parts of it several times. Last night, the CBC, the National, began a new series called Exposing Hate. The first in the series was only 8 minutes long and focused on my new hometown of Hamilton. Of course, they showed recent footage of my friend LaVon is writing, your meaning my, demonstration with our beautiful flag, the red ensign, not Pearson's pennant. Your face appeared very briefly on the right hand of the screen. They badmouthed the chief of police and the mayor for defending freedom of speech. Very reluctantly, the mayor does. Basically, from the point of view, shucks, unfortunately, because of free speech guarantees, which are not quite as good as they may sound, our hands are tied. But I mean, if we really could do what we wanted to, dedicated supporters of free speech are fairly few and far between. They did show the elderly woman being accosted by the masked thug screaming Nazi when she entered the People's Party of Canada meeting, but they soon turned their sympathy to one of the hoodlums by mentioning his father had a restaurant in Toronto and implied it would be vandalized. And she goes on to say, yesterday two people were killed in a shooting outside a synagogue in Halle, Germany. The suspect fired several shots from a submachine gun, killing two people and injured several others before fleeing. Now she's quoting a report. I don't think it was a submachine gun. A hand grenade was thrown into the Jewish cemetery. TV footage described the killer as being on the right. And she thinks it's a false flag. It's hard to know. Anyway, back to the CBC series. It's about hate, but, you know, it never interviewed me. It never interviewed anybody from the Yellow Vests. It simply provided open forum to various so-called experts and bellyachers. A professor from McMaster University was saying that we have to be proactive. We have to confront hate early. And they're blaming both the police and the city council for not doing anything. Well, and not doing anything about what? About protests. Peaceful protests. They were peaceful until, on some occasions, the radical Antifa attacked, and there were some fist fights. The police's only role in this should be protecting law and order, keeping things peaceful. Now, I was down at Hamilton City Hall, I think it was 3 weeks ago on a Saturday, and was part of a protest, and basically about freedom of speech. Gave an interview to the local paper, and the police there had to say were fairly effective. Although they didn't actually keep the two sides, as these were the Antifa, some communists, some what Dr. Sears would call crazy cat ladies, and those of us who were nationalists, white nationalists, religious folk, and so on. Although they kept a close eye on things, and they actually had a couple of mounted police as well. So if anything had developed, they were prepared to move in, and that's the way it should be. Well, one of the points that came out even out of this CBC smear job was that there is no consistent definition of a hate crime across Canada. In fact, there really is no consistent definition of hate, and I'll tell you why. Because the people that say hate crime, hate speech, hate this, hate that, are people who could not define it. When they say hate, what they are really saying is that what you have said is an opinion I hate. Those hollering about hate speech and hate this and hate that are really telling you more about themselves than about the content of whatever it is they're bellyaching about. You know, and I think that's something that's got to be kept pretty firmly in your mind in order to keep sane about these matters. there was in this 8 minute news story, there's much concern about Hamilton being the hate capital of Canada. And you might ask, well, how did that happen? Well, it comes down to statistics. Apparently, there'd been a huge increase in reported hate incidents from 2018 over 2017. So it was a city where there had been the largest increase. That's how it came to be the hate capital of Canada. As you can see, we're already playing with figures. Being called the hate capital only basically because there had been a bigger increase in Hamilton than in any other city. Now, sophisticated people know that those figures can be manipulated. For instance, if you encouraged your left-wing anti-free speech supporters to report every scrap of graffiti they saw, or even if they came upon a pamphlet that they didn't like, report that as a hate incident. Well, you could really goose up the figures. Or supposing, just hypothetically, somebody had taken a magic marker and scrawled a swastika on a construction hoarding. Okay. Well, you might say that's one hate. I don't call it hate. It's petty vandalism, if anything. And what's a swastika? Well, it could be, I support National Socialism, which actually is legal. Or it could be, I'm a follower of the ancient Aryan religions. I've seen swastikas in Japan. I've seen swastikas around Hindu temples. It's a potent and very ancient symbol. So by itself, frankly, it doesn't mean anything. I mean, its meaning could be, let's say, ambiguous. So supposing I'm an Antifa, so I call that in as there's a swastika on the construction hoarding at Main Street in Queen. So the police dutifully note that down. That's one incident. Well, I get my masked Antifa buddy to call in, and he goes, I just saw a swastika on a construction hoarding. And that's another incident. When you analyze the hate incidents for 2018 in the city of Hamilton, there were about 90. Of them, 72 were, get this, no, not bombings, no, not beatings, graffiti. Oh boy, the problem, the great crisis, the hate capital suddenly dissipates like a little bit of mist on an autumn morning after the sun comes up. It's gone. There really is nothing there. So, okay, it was 72 of the 90 that were down about 18. We're not told what those were. Well, actually, they could have been literature in many cases. Of the whole 90-some supposed hate crimes, 7 charges were laid. We're not told how they were disposed of. In fact, they may not have even been before the courts yet. So what would you be charged for? Well, probably, and this would be my guess in most cases, assault. So, okay, guys are drinking, somebody gets into it with somebody else, and maybe calls him a nigger, or calls him a fag, or there's a few punches are thrown. Now that could be considered, that would, I should say, by the authorities be considered a hate crime. Now, of course, that's, I would say, an alleged hate crime until there's actually a trial and the courts render a decision as to, in fact, whether a crime took place or whether the person accused was the one who did it. Anyway, when you actually take a close look at this stuff, it's a lot of a lot of hot air and smoke. Okay, well, the story just gets better and better. This is a writer in the Hamilton Spectator today. The mask was bad enough. Unmasking was worse. Ooh, I dealt with this last night, but there's some updates in the story. But okay. Unless you're Batman or wearing a Halloween costume, it's generally a bad idea to wear a mask in public. Okay, I agree with that. Sure, some athletes in need of protection wear them. Okay, like hockey masks or goalie masks. All right. Allah al-Sufi was wearing a mask when he did something he probably shouldn't have. But it was his eventual unmasking that was truly terrifying. Well, I don't agree with that. Allah al-Sufi is a Syrian refugee, so-called, in Toronto. He came all the way out to Hamilton, 40-some miles away, on the 20th, I believe. No. It was 27th of September, and this was a rally that attracted over 1,000 people at Mohawk College, and it was a rally for the Populist People's Party of Canada and Maxime Bernier, the party leader. Well, the Antifa had done their best to have the meeting canceled. What I call the Uptown Antifa, these are people who actually use their name, people like Evan Balgord of the Canadian Anti-Hate Network, wrote an op-ed piece, and they tried to pressure Mohawk College into canceling the event. That did not work, so instead of being canceled, a collection of the street thugs, Antifa, showed up. And there's some fists thrown, some shouting, and so on. And then what really gathered a lot of attention, and I'll go back to Drew Edwards' article. So, al-Sufi was one of two people captured on video taken by Hamilton Spectator photographer and then put up on the social media. In it, al-Sufi and another person protesting an appearance by People's Party leader Maxime Bernier at Mohawk College, I'm sorry, it was on September 29th, interfered with an elderly woman trying to cross the driveway with a walker, painfully inching her way with her walker to attend the event. Both protesters were wearing masks. The video went viral, a useful propaganda tool for the far right to demonize mask-wearing protesters they label as Antifa. Well, that's what they call themselves. We don't label them that. They are. They call themselves Antifa or Antifa. Demonize. Well, no. We're showing that video shows how they behave. And this was by no means the only time they've been violent. In fact, I've seen them for years violently attacking people. At one Yellow Vest protest in January, several of them charged across the street when I went toward my car. And we've got this captured on video. Took some whacks at my car with their placards or their sticks or whatever. Now, they didn't do a lot of damage, but this notion that this video is to demonize them. No, it's to show what these people are like. And almost as unsettling, perhaps the most unsettling thing in that video was this demented female, I assume she's female, hiding behind a big mask, screaming, Nazi, and Nazis off our street, and so on. I mean, she's like a whirling dervish in front of this elderly lady. Nobody had to demonize anybody. And whether al-Sufi was part of the catch-all boogeyman that is Antifa or not, it wasn't a good look. No, well, he was there. He was participating. I don't know. I think it's being a little precious to say, well, whether he was part of it or not. Well, he was part of it. I'm not sure that Antifa is an organization with card-carrying members, but he was part of that protest. He wasn't just standing around in the parking lot. And Drew Edwards goes on to say, blocking an old lady from getting from A to B isn't going to win your hearts or minds, no matter how justified the maneuver or the cause. Well, I don't think the cause is justified, but in the days that followed, the right-wing set used the T-shirt al-Sufi was wearing along with other photos and videos from the web to identify him and his family. Syrians who came to Canada in 2015 and started, well, says Edwards, a successful restaurant. We'll see. Despite the fact that the family patriarch apologized for his son's behavior, the dark corners of humanity that support the worst of the alt-right cause did their thing, threatening the family and the business to the point that it closed this week. Okay, I mentioned that last night, but
I ask you to put on the your cap as a reasonable thinker and a man or woman of the world. Okay, now we are told, and I've seen no independent evidence, that they received all sorts of emails and threats. My reading is this: even many militant people on the white nationalist side are not likely to write threatening emails. I'm not saying the odd one might not, but I doubt that there was a large number. Okay, but let's assume, or let's suppose there were a few. Now here again, using your experience as a reasonable, knowledgeable man or woman of the world, would you take this seriously? In and of itself, no. Now, when I ran for mayor in 2018, I received, on the social media, there were a number of direct threats against me. Almost always, by people that I could not identify. You know, they unlike me, I post on Facebook, Twitter, Gab, in my own name. I'm not, Beast from the East or Odin's Vengeance or some made up name. I am whom I am, and that's a useful restraint. Anything I post, I own, which means I've got to be sensible. Anyway, my strong conclusion, and I think yours would be too, that anonymous people who mouth off, assuming this happened, are not the ones you have to fear. Somebody lurking in his parents' basement with some militant-sounding name, Odin's sword or something like that, is not the type who's actually going to do something. If I intended to do something to those people or somebody else, I would not make a threat under my own name, or if I even knew how to do it, to under a made-up name. I wouldn't. If I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. But why would I make a threat? Well, I want to warn them to be on the on their guard. No. My strong advice would have been, if indeed any of these threats were made, and we have only their word for it, to ignore them or take prudent precautions. Now, in the intervening week, there's been no evidence that anybody did anything, threw a brick through the window, firebomb through the window. No. Again, assuming these threats even existed. Furthermore, these al-Sufis, that's the family name, supposedly had come from Syria as refugees, although Faith Goldie put out information that they'd actually not been in Syria, or at least had not come directly from Syria, but from one of the Gulf states, where they'd run a golf course. So they're not poor. But they've come from an area of the world where there is violence, and there's a lot of violence, no doubt about it. So you mean to tell me that people who lived in areas where you could be bombed or shot or tortured and so on are going to turn tail from supposedly some emails? I think that's strange credibility. Okay, the restaurant closed a couple of days ago. Today, it's opened. Why? Well, a militant Muslim businessman from Mississauga, he's with something I believe called Paramount Foods, he runs a couple of grocery stores, has vowed to back them and support them, and will provide them with business expertise. Now, do you see something or detect something a little unusual here? I thought the worry were some sort of right wingers or white nationalists making these threats. In other words, wasn't the story that there was some sort of physical threat to them, their property, their staff, their customers? The neo-Nazi terrorists are everywhere. Now, the rich Muslim businessman is going to provide them with management expertise. I'm going to tell you what I think, and I'm not stating this as a fact, but I invite you to wonder, okay, well, does management expertise deal with their problem? I mean, the people who allegedly made threats are still out there, right? I'll tell you what I think it was. I think the restaurant was failing. And this was a good opportunity for a boo-hoo-hoo moment, and presto, a savior arrives. I suspect a savior with money. I suggest that as a more likely interpretation, because we had an incident a couple months back in Winnipeg, and this was a small bar that was owned by several Jews family, and out of the blue, somebody apparently broke into the restaurant and the bar, and at night, I think spray painted or painted some slogans and some swastikas, knocked a few things over, and then grabbed the woman from behind, and then fled. Well, this is the worst. In fact, one of the head Jews in Winnipeg said this was the worst example of Nazi violence ever in Winnipeg. I don't think this guy's very old, because in the days prior to World War II, and I know several people who were there at the time, there were regular clashes between pro-Hitler youth groups and Jews and communist Jews. Okay, but all right, allow for the exaggeration. So this is the worst. And down the street, some silly willy female pastor at, I believe, a United Church was organizing a community solidarity event to embrace these Jews and shore them up and so on. Well, I think the police fortunately were somewhat skeptical of the circumstances and looked into it, and it turned out it was all a hoax. They had done the damage to themselves, and the woman had never been assaulted. And when you think about it, some guy she didn't see grabbed her from behind around the neck and then let her go, but she didn't turn around to look. Well, you asked yourself, like, to what purpose? You know, if he's going to assault her, you know, smack her around or whatever, but none of it made any sense. So anyway, they eventually did, I believe, were charged with a mischief, and it turned out that the restaurant, the bar, then closed. They in fact had been going bankrupt for the last few months. So this anti-Semitic attack was in fact, I think, an effort to perhaps scam some money out of well-wishers, or perhaps there was some other financial angle, but it turned out to be a complete hoax. I invite you to look very skeptically at the Al Sufi. Now it's closed. Now it's reopened. Although apparently, the people who supposedly made threats about it against it are still out there. My strong belief is that there were no threats, or if there were, there were very, very few. The sort of things that happen all the time in controversial situations. And
sensible people, take them with a grain of salt. I'm not so worried about the crazy who makes anonymous threats, because he's making threats. Well, the person I'm worried about is the person who isn't saying anything, who may do something. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Let's go to some more cheery subject, and this is the pride of Bakersfield, California. He brought the Bakersfield country song, the sound, to Nashville in the 1960s, and this is the late Buck Owens and his group, the Buckaroos. This is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me.
Oh, the sun's gonna shine in my life once more. Life's gonna lift here again. Things are gonna be the way they were before. Life's gonna lift here again. Life's gonna lift here. Life's gonna lift here. Life's gonna lift here. Thank you.
Are are now at an end. The key to my heart you hold in your hand, and nothing else matters. We're together again.
And that I'm sorry for the quarrel that we
we have. If you leave, you're gonna tear my world to pieces. So take it slow, be sure you know before you go. Before you go, be sure you know how much I love you and that I'm sorry for the quarrel that we had. If you leave, you're gonna tear my world to pieces. So take it slow, be sure you know before you go.
That's Buck Owens, the pride of Bakersfield. This is Paul Prong, your own playing side of me. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern Time. The show is repeated today in the morning, 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf, forever. This is Paul Prong, and you're on the fighting side of me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and planted firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together, the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died. And those dear rights which they maintained, we swear to yield them never. Our watchword evermore shall be the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen, and heaven bless the maple leaf forever.